one of the things that I say is the most courageous thing you can do above all bravery is, this is the personal life that I really keep to myself. You know, I've spoken a lot about it today, which I've never spoken about before.
Ant Middleton. Ant is an adventurer, a military vet, a television host, an author, an entrepreneur, and one that's become highly, highly respected as an authority when it comes to things like survival and endurance and leadership techniques. And due to his experiences as an elite special force member, he can talk about these things in a way that nobody else can. Ant has very, very recently been at the center of a huge media storm where he was quote unquote cancelled, with his biggest show today, SAS Who Dares Wins, being axed by Channel 4 after 5 years. And the broadcaster came out and said that Ant's views and values weren't aligned to theirs. This is his first in-depth conversation that he's recorded since he was quote-unquote cancelled. I've watched countless amounts of interviews that Ant Middleton has done, but the side of Ant that you're going to hear today is one that even he admits himself that he has never fully shared before. I'm going to say it. This podcast lifted a ton of weight off my shoulders and answered maybe the most important question about life that we all must ask ourselves if we are going to be happy and if we're going to be successful and if we're going to be free. Ant, thank you for your honesty. Without further ado, I'm Stephen Bartlett and this is The Diary of a CEO. I hope nobody's listening, but if you are, then please keep this to yourself. Ant, when I was reading your book, First Man In, there's this quote at the end of one of the chapters, and I thought it was a good place to start this conversation today because I tend to think that it's probably one of the more foundational pieces of information. Well, it might lead to one of the most foundational pieces of information to describe who you became in your life and what you've gone on to achieve. And this is what you wrote at the end of the chapter. It says, it's called Making Friends with Your Demons. Having dark forces living within us is part of being human. They're the result of inevitable damage of life. Each one of us has a choice. Make these demons work for us or turn them loose against us. And slightly linked to that, on the same page, you wrote, most of us have horror stories we can tell you about from our childhoods. It's not the horror that defines you, it's how well you fought it. What did that mean?
I think that's just a generic message to everyone to say that it's okay to have, you know, bad thoughts. It's okay to have these demons inside you. They exist in all of us, you know, but the important message is to exercise them. Because the moment you lock them away, the moment you lock these thoughts away, the moment you lock these demons away, the moment you lock any negativity away, all it's going to do is take over like a mold, and it's going to completely engulf you, and it's going to control you as an individual. And it's only because I've been there and I've done it, whether that's what I've done in combat, losing my father at a young age, losing my mother, seeing bodies blown up around me, seeing dead people around me, seeing the effect it has on families, seeing what my decision, pulling that trigger or not, has on a certain person or has on a certain family or has on a certain situation. And it's ultimately being okay with who you are. That's the whole thing about it. It's being, acknowledging that, listen, we're not perfect. We're human. Okay, we have weaknesses, we have insecurities, we have these horrendous thoughts sometimes. Now, you'd be a liar to say that you don't sit there sometimes and, you know, the things that go through your head, if you actually voice them, then that becomes a problem. That's you not exercising your demons, that's them exercising you. And it's just about acknowledging that. And I acknowledge that from such a young age. I acknowledged that from a young age when my father passed away and I couldn't really understand what was going on.
Can you tell me about that?
My father passed away when I was 5 years old. And within a few months, a new man came into our life, my stepfather. And then within 2 years, we up moved to France. So we lived in Portsmouth. We up and moved completely to France, a new situation, a new environment, a new man in our life. And I can just remember thinking, I remember going into a bush in the fields where we lived in France after a couple of months we were there, and I sat in this bush and the magnitude of the situation was so overwhelming. I can just remember looking at the road and thinking to myself, what am I doing here? Why am I here? What's the purpose? I couldn't grasp anything at that young age. And it was during that moment when I let everything go. And I can just remember thinking to myself, don't try and understand what's going on. Don't try and understand who this man is and where he's come from. Don't try and understand why you're in a different school speaking a different language, because you can't. Don't try and understand all of a sudden you're living in caravans. We moved. We were living in a couple of caravans. We were a big family from houses. And I can just remember dropping everything and thinking to myself, understand what you can understand. And that at that young age, what I could understand was what I was feeling. You know, I could understand myself. So when I look back on the death of my father, and as I flip everything into a positive, even though years and years and years down the line, I'd done this, you know, the death of my father actually made me self-reflect from the age of 6 or 7. So I've been self-reflecting, you know, understanding my emotions, understanding how I feel, understanding my demons, understanding, you know, the good parts of me, the bad parts of me, the weak parts of me, the strong parts of me, the positive side of me, the negative side of me. And I've been really breaking it down from such a young age. And that's given me an advantage in life. I generally believe that that's given me my sort of bulletproof mindset on how to tackle anyone or any situation today. So even though it's a traumatic part of my life, and it affected me all the way up to my mid-20s in a bad way, where I'd go out and try and understand who my father was, try and understand, you know, I never went to his funeral. I never went to his grave. You know, my stepdad, because he came in my life so young, I called him my dad. They never told me where he was buried. He was just completely cut out of our life. Because of the situation beforehand, you know, for him to come into our lives a couple of months after, it was pretty obvious that my mum was obviously having an affair or there's something going on. And again, I'm not judging anyone or the situation, but, you know, so when he came into our life, it was like, right, you call him dad. My name changed from Aaron to Middleton. Not a lot of people know that.
Really?
Yeah. And this whole new life was just forced upon me. So I was either forced to act or forced not to act. You know, sitting in that bush, me forcing not to act was probably jumping in the road, you know, thinking, all right, listen, enough is enough.
Did that cross your mind?
It was a big road. It was a big road. And it never got to that stage where I thought, right, I'm going to take my life. But it was like, you know, there's an easy option out of here. Do you know what I mean? It's like, there is an easy option out of here, but it never crossed my mind to do it. But I can just remember thinking of that road, thinking the cars move fast there. Do you know what I mean? If you wanted to, it's more like if you wanted to.
Yeah. So it crosses your mind.
Yeah, it crosses your mind, but it doesn't register.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's only, you know, throughout these few years when you start to reflect back on who you are and what you've been through, you start to go, bloody hell, man, actually, maybe I was thinking like that at a young age. So, but then again, you know, who I am, I'm honest with myself. I'm honest with my demons. I'm honest with who I am. And ultimately, I'm honest with knowing that we're not perfect.
You know, a lot of people, and you've described it there, they never admit their demons to themselves. Mm-hmm. And what ends up happening is those demons run the show, but from the back room.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I guess you see that a lot with, you know, people that have come back from war as well, because they don't get the support they need. But
I see it during war.
Yeah.
I see people, level-headed, intelligent soldiers, lose their head on the battlefield, come running past you, doing things that you think, wow, where the hell did that come from? You look into their eyes and there's fucking nothing there. Nothing there. And then, boom. They flip out and you're like, do you realize what you just done? Like, you know, it's, you know, those demons are fucking strong. They're there.
How do you address them?
You have to exercise them.
You
know, the way I exercise my demons is by getting like-minded, similar people in the same room in a safe environment. And I might drink myself into oblivion till 3-4 in the morning, you know, chatting about what we've done, chatting about old times, chatting about who we are. And then boom, I'm done for 6 months. You know, I've released those demons. When you, you know, intoxicate yourself with alcohol, you know, it allows you to talk. And I'm not saying go out there and do that, but that's just my way of coming from a drinking culture, i.e. the military, a drinking and a fighting culture. That's the way that we deal with things. And for now it might be a blowout where, you know, I go out and, you know, I'll have a nice meal and, you know, we'll have a few glasses of wine, you know, and we'll be in a private room and we'll shoot the shit and, you know, just talk about whatever we need to talk about, whatever's on your mind. But also physically, I exercise my demons physically. You know, I put myself in horrendous situations in order to fight against myself. Everest is a prime example of that.
I was going
to
say,
You know, I didn't have to go up during the storms. If I was the normal, sensible person, I would have went up after that storm went.
So just for context, you decided to climb Mount Everest with a buddy of yours at probably the worst possible time, and you got into a little bit of a predicament up there.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah. To say the least, yeah. But it's one of those where I didn't just want to walk up on a nice sunny day, you know, and gain nothing from that experience.
Why though? Like, why are you voluntarily putting yourself through chaos and what anyone else would perceive to be agony? Why are you choosing that?
That's me exercising my demons.
Really?
That's me, you know, pushing myself to that limit. That's me having tasted that drug of living on that line of life and death. And a lot of people think that drug's adrenaline, but it's not. I don't feel pumped. I feel ultimate peace. So people find this bizarre, but when I walk that line of life and death, which I've done multiple times, it's a pure feeling of euphoria. It's not what you think, where you feel pumped and your eyes are red and you've got this aggression going through you and you have to get through this moment. It's like life is so uncomplicated, Steve. So uncomplicated. You're either going to live or you're going to die. All the bullshit, all the complications of life that is implemented on you, whether that's through government, whether that's through work, whether that's through family, all of that goes. And you are left with the most purest form of life. And it's so uncomplicated that it's so euphoric. Mm. It's so peaceful. And when you hear of World War One and World War Two poets that are writing poems in trenches, people are like, how the hell are they writing poems in trenches? I understand that feeling because life is so uncomplicated. It's so pure. It's so peaceful that they're writing with no stresses, no complications, no bullshit. It's coming from the purest form of life of I'm either going to live or I'm going to die. And it's that feeling that I chase. I chase that feeling where I just want that moment of peace, of pure and utter peace for 10, 15 minutes. That drug I chase, and that's crossing those boundaries, crossing those lines, crossing any limitations to the edge of life. You take that step, you're gone. You go over that edge, you know, you're going to feel it. You're going to feel alive. You're going to feel everything that you need to, that you need out of life. But for me, that's exercising my demons. So whether I do it psychologically, where I'm putting myself in situations that I'm saying stuff that I believe in, that I value, that is a message and it's being contradicted, or whether I'm pushing myself to a physical limit or putting myself in a physical situation which is uncomprehendable to the everyday man or woman. But it's because I've tasted it. I've had the misfortune. I've had the burden of tasting that drug. And will it be the end of me? I can't say that for sure. I can't say that it won't. I can't say that, you know, I've never put myself in these situations again because I find myself constantly doing it. But for me, that is exercising my demons. And everyone's demons are different. Everyone's situation is different. Everyone's emotions are different. Everyone's DNA is different. But that's me exercising my demons.
quick one. Starting from the minute the lockdown is lifted, we're going to start bringing in some of our subscribers to watch how this podcast is produced behind the scenes. It means you get to meet the guests, meet myself, and see how we put all of this together. If you want that to be you, all you've got to do, hit the subscribe button. What are the other, if any, moments from your early years that went into shaping the man you became? Was there anything else? Because I hear you in your books and in your writing and your interviews continue to cite that sort of trauma with your father and your stepfather then coming in and being the way that he was. But was there anything up leading until, you know, your 20s that you cite as being pivotal in who you became?
Yeah, when I joined the British military, I joined the army at the age of 16. I'm just going on to 17. And I came from a background of French culture. Yeah. You know, I'd go out and drink coffee when I was 14, play bowling when I was 15. You know, and then all of a sudden I get thrown into a male dominant organization. The culture, drinking, fighting, you fit in or you fuck off. It's as simple as that. So what do? You try and fit in. But when you try and put a round peg into a square hole, you know, you're going to get stuck. And you either stay stuck, okay, you go around pleasing everyone else, or you pull yourself out of that situation. And that's ultimately what I've done with the army. I spent 4 years in the army, then left because of that situation. It wasn't me. I wasn't this aggressive young lad that loved drinking. I'd never used to drink. I was always polite, always respectful. I'd walk past someone, I'd tip my hat. You know, in France, you say bonjour, and you know, you just have a little chat. You do that in England when I was 16, 17, walking past someone, nodding at him. They're like, what the fuck are you looking at? No, it used to shock me. And I used to think, I'm only saying hi, mate. What, you know? And that was a pivotal 4 years in my life where I thought to myself, right, can I ever fit in to this UK culture? Or I can pull myself out of it. And for the first 4 years, I found myself fitting in. And I found myself being good at drinking. I found myself being good at fighting. I found myself being good at being a fucking dickhead, you know, because that's what I needed to be to fit in. So again, those were demons that I discovered along the way that I found that I was good at. So would I let anyone take the piss out of me anymore? You bet no, because you're gonna get a good hiding. You know, would I go out and drink and fit in? Yeah, of course I would. You know, it's just, hey, one of the lads, I want to fit in. Do you know what I mean? I'm so far detached from all of that. But if I'm this young, polite, respectful, sort of multicultural individual, then that's gonna be a more of a hindrance moving forward in what I need to do, especially in the military, than it is a benefit. So you find yourself turning into this person. I can just remember I was about 21 and I went to Macedonia and I worked with the French Foreign Legion out there because I could speak fluent French. And I worked with the French Foreign Legion a bit and I saw how they were. They were very, very mature, very sort of, you know, going back to that French culture, you know, they're all family orientated, very. I thought to myself, wow, this is who I am. And when I got back off that tour, I can just remember going to the squadron bar. I was in 9 Parachute Squadron, Royal Engineers, going to the squadron bar. We'd just done a 6-month tour. I'm going to the squadron bar and I remember walking in there and I remember seeing someone, a staff sergeant, probably about 35, 36, you know, I'm a young 20, 21 year old, drinking from a boot, from an old desert boot, right? And he's drinking piss from a boot. And I can just remember looking at him thinking, if I continue the way that I'm going, that's going to be me in 15 years time. And it scared the hell out of me. I can remember just thinking, I've got to get the hell out of here. And I walked out of that bar and the next day I put my notice in. I was like, that, this is not who I am. This is not, you know, I've gained more demons from this 4 years than I have any friends, any benefits from it. And that was a pivotal point. That was a pivotal point in my life where I thought to myself, wow, you know, I can either change in such a way and just be stuck in this square hole, or I can pull myself out, rebuild on the foundations that I have of knowing that I'm a good person.
And from there, you handed in your notice. And what happened next?
From there, I handed in my notice and I left. And I found that in Civvy Street, I was acting the person that I never wanted to be in the military.
Right.
But I'd found that that had followed me, that that had taken charge of me.
You mean, be specific.
So those demons that, those demons that had sort of identified themselves within that 4 years were running the show. So okay. When I got out, I joined the Metropolitan Police and I was acting like a proper squaddy.
Right.
You know, going out drinking every night, you know, cheating on my exams, drink driving. You know, I got all the way through training. A couple of weeks to go, passed all the tests. I got caught drink driving. Man. Boom. Kicked out the Met, out of the training in Hendon. But it didn't bother me. I was like, once a soldier, always a soldier. And I was living in the past and being someone who completely wasn't me, but who had control of me. And then getting into the street life. You know, I got into the street life where, you know, fighting, not gangs, but that social circle where, you know, you have to uphold a reputation where you, and the one thing that I, you know, the thing that I was good at that fitted me is that I was a good scrapper. I know how to scrap. I know how to drink. I know how to fight. But you find yourself reverting back to the person who you never wanted to be. And I suppose that was the defense mechanism. I knew that that worked in the UK. I'd never trialed and tested anything else. As soon as I came over to the UK, straight into the military again. Now, I spent 10, 12 years in France before that. Then boom, straight over into the British culture. And I thought that's how you acted. I never knew what Civvy Street was about because I was never in it. So it took me a good couple of years again to realize.
What saved you? What pulled you out of this job, bit?
There's one moment that saved me. I refused to sign on. I refused to take any help from the government.
Same.
And I can remember my auntie. I was living with my auntie at the time. She said, "Aunt, you've got no money. What are you going to do?" I said, "Well, I'm going to go down to the job centre." She said, "Well, why don't you just sign on, you know, until you find a job?" I'm like, "No." I was proud. I was like, "No, I've never taken a penny off the government." And I thought, "No, I'm going to go to the job centre." And I remember walking up the stairs, and I had my red book. And the red book, when you leave the military, it's got all your qualifications, military qualifications, all your credentials. And I walked into the job centre, and the guy obviously recognised the book. So they probably have hundreds of people going there, you know, a year. And he said, "Oh, mate, you're ex-military, aren't you?" I was like, "Yeah." He said, "Come to the desk." He sat down with me, and he opened up my book and he started reading my book. And he looked up at me and he said, "Why did you leave the military?" And before I could answer, I was going to say something back. And he said, "Well, I have hundreds of these come across my desk." And he said, "This is one of the best reports I've ever read." He said, "So my advice to you," as he slammed the book shut, he went, "Go back into that space." And I can remember just sitting there. I was 22, sitting there and I'm thinking, "Right, okay, he's going to offer me a job now." And he just handed me the book and called over the next person. And I was just like, so I remember picking up the book to myself, "God, he just told me I've got, you know." But obviously there's all military qualifications. There's nothing for me out there apart from to empty bins or whatever it may be. And I remember taking the book. And as I walked down the steps of the job center, I sat down halfway down on the steps. And I had a train ticket in my pocket and probably about a couple of quid loose change. That was my life. This was at the age of 22, 23 maybe. And I can just remember thinking to myself, right, why the hell are you sat skint, nothing in your life apart from the clothes that you're wearing and what's in your pockets, jobless? And then a moment of clarity just hit me. It's almost as if I had an out-of-body experience and I was looking back at the boy sitting on the step. And I can just remember thinking to myself, right, I'll tell you why. It's because you're pretending to be someone else. You're lying to yourself, therefore you're living a lie. You think you're better than everyone else. You know, you've got this reputation that you want to uphold. That's not you. You're just a shadow of who you really are. You're not, you know, who the hell do you think you are? because the person that I'm looking at, you know, almost looking in the mirror, the person that I'm looking at is exactly where he should be, sat on a fucking step, jobless, with nothing. Because this isn't you. And if you want to live in the shadow, if you want to stay stuck in that hole, in that square hole, then keep lying to yourself and keep living a lie. And that moment, I'll always go back to that moment. Whenever I get a bit above myself or a bit too big for my boots, I always go back to that moment where I rip myself apart, because it freed me as an individual. And I promise you this, and it's not cliche, this isn't some kind of fucking bullshit story that I'm telling you. It freed me as an individual, because I can remember standing up on them steps, feeling like a new man, because I just identified who I was. This isn't you. Get that out of your life. Get that out of your life. Get that out of your life. Be you. And I had those foundations to fall back on because I knew who I was ultimately, but it was just covered in ego, covered with so much bullshit, covered with so much complications that I'd implemented on myself. And when I got rid of it all, I just thought, do you know what? I was good at the military. I've got best recruit, best PT when I was in the army. Do you know what I'm going to do? I love that lifestyle, but I was just around the wrong people. I was in the wrong regiment, you know. I'm going to rejoin the military, but I'm going to be a team player. I'm going to be myself. I'm going to be this respectful gentleman, hard worker that I know that I am. Do you know what I mean? I'm not going to go out boozing. I'm not going to go out fighting. I'm not going to try and fit in. You know, if they don't accept me for who I am, then so be it. The military obviously isn't for me. And I joined the Royal Marines. I went straight down the careers office, straight down the careers office and joined the Royal Marines. And within a couple of months, because of my previous military history, I got in very quick. And within a couple of months, I found myself going through Royal Marine training. Wow. And when I passed out of Royal Marine training, I got awarded with Best Recruit, which is the King's Badge. And I can just remember thinking to myself, right, Ant, you've been here before. You know, you got Best Recruit, Best PT, you know, you rested on your laurels, went to your unit, didn't really fit in. You're in the same position now. Now you can either use this as a positive and push forward and you know, go on to achieve great things, or you can try and fit in, booze, fight, be a camp hero, you know, a pub soldier, and just be back to square one where you was 5, 6, 7 years ago.
There's something, and I want to carry on from that story, but just going back to that, I find it super fascinating that you're sat on those stairs and at a moment when your ego kind of dissolves because of the circumstances you find yourself in, you're actually able then to go and pursue your true self. And I find, you know, I had someone sat in this chair previously and he's the biggest investor in the world in psychedelics. And one of the things that he talks about with psychedelics is it, what it does is it strips back the bullshit, your ego, the identity you've been living to please society. And what's left is like who you actually are. And it's so funny that so many of the guests I speak to and so many of the psychologists I've spoken to talk about, in order to like find your happiness and pursue your true self, you have to get rid of that bullshit. And what I was hearing when you were saying that is, you know, you'd created this reputation and identity for yourself, which actually was leading you astray, but it was helping you survive in those circles.
Absolutely.
And this tough decision to say, do you know what? I'm going to break out of that circle, leave that identity behind, throw myself into an uncertain moment and go in pursuit of like who I actually am. And everybody faces that in their life. Mm-hmm. You know, as a kid growing up in Devon in a school of 1,500 white kids, pretending that I liked indie music and pretending I was to fit in and survive.
Yeah, survival mechanism.
Yeah, and I left the city because I deep down in my heart, I didn't resonate with anybody. Mm-hmm. But I was in that small town city surrounded by 1,500 white kids that liked the Kooks.
And that's my army career. That was my army career.
And then 18, I was like, I'm out of here. I'm going to go be Steve. Moved to Manchester, you know, and I dropped out and I started to... And I think everybody in their life, regardless of what walk of life, you face that decision. And either you've realized that you're living an identity or a life untrue to yourself, and you've gone on the journey to go find yourself. Or right now, as you're listening to this, you are, and you'll know it.
Yeah.
Because the words that you've described there will ring true.
Mm. You'll feel that completely. You know? I completely understand that. And that makes complete sense to me. And one of the things that I say is the most courageous thing you can do, above all bravery, is to be honest with yourself.
Why is that so hard these days? Quick one. As you may know, Huel sponsored this podcast. I had one day last week, it was actually Sunday, where I didn't have my Huel and I had a little bit of junk food. And I don't know what it is, but I think my body has got used to eating clean food, because for the next 3 days, I felt, and I still kind of feel, what day are we on now? Tuesday. I still kind of feel crap from the junk food that I had. Just had one junk meal. I had this junk meal, right? I still feel crap now. I don't know what it is. I think my body has genuinely got used to eating good food. So the minute now that I put in something that is bad for me, my body goes, Steve, what are you doing? And I felt bad for the last 2 days, and I've returned to Huel and I feel good again. This is just an anecdotal story, but I said this to my PA last night. I said, for some reason, having now transitioned to a really good diet on Huel, any sort of dabble with the stuff that I used to eat is more sort of alarming to my body, and I notice it way more than I ever had. So yeah, you know, it's one thing having a podcast sponsor that pays you money, but it's another thing having a podcast sponsor who you genuinely believe can help people change their lives for the better.
One of the things that I say is the most courageous thing you can do, above all bravery, is to be honest with yourself.
Why is that so hard these days?
You know, people say to me, "Ant, you know, what's the bravest thing you've ever done?" And I always talk about the story of the job centre steps, because that took courage, that took balls, that's bravery right there. You know, I've been in rooms where bullets are flying over my head, I've kicked doors down, and you know, I've saved life. It's like, that's not being brave. That's just me being extremely good at my job and loving what I do. You know, there's nothing to do with bravery. You know, bravery is almost forced upon you. But when you decide to step into the arena, when you decide to step into that and go, right, I'm going to face this and put that mirror on yourself, ultimately facing yourself, that is the hardest but most liberating thing I've ever done. And people shy away from that and they live in the void. They live this life where they just live in the void. I call it, say you're on autopilot, because you're lying to yourself. And it's pretty simple. Therefore, you're going to live a lie. I don't care. I'm not the Archbishop of Canterbury. You know, I'm not a rocket scientist. It's just simple science. You know, if you lie to yourself, well, guess what? You're going to live a lie. But standing in a mirror and ripping yourself apart does take away all the bullshit and all the complications. And it frees you as an individual. But you have to do it on a regular basis. You can't just go, "Oh, I've done it once, or here we go, I found myself, this is who I am." Because hopefully you're constantly changing, you're constantly evolving, you're constantly adapting your mindset. You know, that's what evolution is about. You know, the world is designed to you know, is evolutionizes, and we are designed to do exactly the same. And the moment that you're not honest with yourself, it's game over for you. It's like you just want to be just that person. You know, like a lot of people say to me, "Ant, fucking hell, remember me from the military?" I'm like, yeah. They go, "Oh, fucking hell, Ant, you've changed a lot. You've changed." And I'm like, "That, I haven't seen you for 10 years. I hope I've changed." Yeah. And I say to them, "You haven't. That's why you're still just that guy. That's why I'm Ant Middleton and you're still just that guy. Is because of course I've changed. I like to think in another 10 years time when you see me that I've changed again. Because if I haven't, I'm doing something wrong. And that doing something wrong is not being honest with myself. And it all goes back to you as an individual. No one can do that for you. No one can do that for you. And I say to everyone, everything starts with you. And it's so true. If you don't want to change, then nothing will change around you. You know, if you don't want to be honest with yourself, well, guess what? You're lying to yourself. It's complete opposite. Therefore, you're living a lie. It's like you have to do this on a weekly or a monthly basis. Anytime an obstacle was thrown in front of you, you can fall back on, right, to be honest with yourself. Be honest with who you are. Be honest with how you tackle things and don't lie to yourself.
The cost of being yourself and being honest with yourself is seemingly increasing in this day and age. And you know, I think that's a really, really valid point, one that I don't think expressed properly, which is you had that reflective moment when you sat on those stairs where you say, "Fuck it, we're going to start being honest with ourselves." But then, especially as you get more successful, you know, in your media career and everything else, the forces at play trying to get you to not be honest with yourself get greater and greater. Mm-hmm. And this is this crazy sort of, I don't know, paradox or whatever we see in society at the moment, which is you being honest with yourself is the reason you're sat here. Mm-hmm. It's the reason you're Ant Middleton.
Yeah.
But, and that's what's made you go explode, right? Mm-hmm. But then the higher you get, it's like, I don't know, the resistance for you not to be yourself becomes greater because now you're more of a target, right?
Yeah.
Hard fucking life to live.
Do you know what? I've been witness of it. You know, the cancel culture, the don't say that, Ant, because you will lose this book deal. You will lose that media career. You will lose that production. I'm witness of it right now. You know, I hear it probably on a weekly basis. But then that's that square peg, round hole. It's like, no, I don't, you know, it's every time I think about that. And I always have two principles with everything that I do is don't go out to offend. So I don't say things to offend people. Therefore, they choose to be offended. I don't say things to offend people. I just say things what I think is right, what have served me good in my experiences and my career and my mindset. And the second thing is, you know, don't do things maliciously. So first of all, don't go out to, it's verbal. Mm-hmm. Then also actions. You know, don't do things maliciously because then ultimately, yeah, you're going to have a backlash. You're going to have a reaction to what you've done. So that's exactly what I do. I don't go out to offend, but I go out to tell the truth. But I also go out to seek the truth, you know, and I go out to seeking the truth. Again, everything starts with you and with who I am.
It's dangerous.
And it's dangerous.
Especially in the social media era.
It's dangerous. It is dangerous. But hopefully you get past that stage of people realizing that actually this is Ant. He's not been any different. He's not, you know, voiced anything different. He's not tried to fit into a media agenda. He's not tried to blag anyone. He's not being fake. This is who Ant Middleton is. And he will always be like that.
Regardless of what.
Yeah, regardless. Right. But then there's that platform of not reaching that level quite yet, and then everything descending upon you. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there that are scared to say what they truly feel, are scared to voice their opinions, are scared to, you know, voice their values, because ultimately it takes food off the table. It's a career stopper. Mm-hmm. When your career stops, guess what suffers after that? Your family. And then when that suffers, guess what? There's not much out there for you. You have to rebuild again. Well, all those 10, 15, 20 years career that you've built all for that one moment, is it worth it? No. So what do you do? Keep quiet. What do you do? Don't do anything. Just say what they want you to say and do what they want you to do. That doesn't fucking rub with me. That's a sore point with me. You know, you try and make me someone that I'm not, like I've been made someone that I'm not. You're probably going to get you're going to get the worst out of me, even more so, because everything comes back around to who you truly are.
They're trying to control you,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's a controlling measure. And it's like, listen, I've let people control my life. I've let situations control my life. And I've ended up psychologically, not physically, psychologically on that brink of questioning who the fuck am I? Who am I? That's what I question. And the moment I start questioning who am I, then I know that project isn't for me. I know that sponsor isn't for me. I know that TV channel or that TV production isn't for me. Because the moment that comes into question, then it's like, you probably don't get who I am. You probably don't understand who I am. You probably haven't done your homework with who I am. Do I fit into your agenda? And it's like, if you don't fit into one agenda, you get bounced, boom, straight across to the opposite side, yeah. Right? It's like, yeah. Listen, I don't belong on that side. Yeah. Just because I don't believe in this side, yeah, doesn't mean I belong on that side. I belong in the middle. Yeah. Now people say, are you on the left, you're on the right? I'm like, I'm not on the left or right. I'm in the fucking middle.
There's
I'm in
no
the middle.
Middle. There's yeah, no middle.
But there is no middle, because yeah, the moment that you go, you say slightly something that goes against this agenda, then again, yeah, you just get bounced straight to the other side.
The right won't recognize you. The left won't recognize you. So there's who are your enemy of both.
Yeah. But it's a dangerous place to live in. It's a sad state of affairs. Real sad state of affairs. And, you know, just because your values and your views are different doesn't mean my message isn't the same. You know, my message, everything that I do is about positivity, is about mindset, is about bringing people together. You look at SAS Who Dares Wins. What does it do? Makes people realize what they're capable of, makes them find themselves. It brings people together, brings families together. You know, mutiny, teamwork brings people together. Escape, you know, straight talking, being honest and open, and it makes you feel good. It brings you together. It unites people because they can be open and honest with themselves, and therefore they know what they're capable of. Self-belief starts to kick in and they feel good about it. It's bringing people together, right? And that is, you'd be inhumane, really, to not think like that, to not want to help people out, to not want to. So the message is always the same, but it's this bit in the middle, right? That you either get pushed to one side. You can't have this sort of in the middle opinion of, well, actually, my values are the same as yours. You know, I'm all about positive change. Yeah, okay. So why are you saying my values don't fit with yours? Because I'm about positive change. Look at my message for the last 5-6 years since I've been in the media. It's positive change. Unity. Look at what I do. Everything I do, whether it's my books, my tours, my TV programs, everything is about bringing people together, bringing the best out of people. So just because this in-between bit, my views are different and mine are probably truthful, which people don't want to hear the truth, it's like, right, bounce off to one side. And then you start to get cancelled. But
what's the answer though? Like, so I hear, we've had Piers Morgan talk a lot about this as well, and other people talk about how, you know, if you don't perfectly fit the views or the perfect hashtag of the left or whatever, then you're basically being cancelled in culture. And I genuinely, this is a fucking, and probably the most genuine question I've ever asked on this podcast, because it's one that I'm thinking about all the time, is I also see this happening. My views don't always fit the left or the right. And sometimes, like in the Black Lives Matter moment, I posted on my Instagram saying, it was actually my best performing post of all time. I said, because there was this whole narrative around like silence is violence, and if you're not saying anything, then you're a racist. Mm-hmm. I did a post saying like, that's obviously bullshit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I said, it's unpopular black opinion. Yep. If someone doesn't post a black square on their Instagram, doesn't make them a racist. People process things in completely different. In fact, the most unnatural reaction to trauma is to take to social media. So like, and that,
absolutely,
it didn't fit the like silence is violence narrative. Mm-hmm. And my ability, and I like, of course that's fucking true. Like, do you know what I mean? It doesn't fit, I understand, right? Mm-hmm. But it's no one, not one individual in the millions and millions of views that post did could tell me there was one slide in that 9 that was, they disagreed with, mm-hmm. but it was the feeling that I wasn't wearing the football kit of the left that made some people go, you're an awful person, Steve. And then I'd go, why? They'd go, ugh.
Yeah, exactly. You see their minds ticking and ticking. You're like, yeah, and I go, tell me
what's wrong with the post. Yeah. They go, oh, you know what's wrong. And I think I know I'm not going to change. Mm-hmm. So when I look into my future, I go, well, at some point I'm going to get cancelled, mm-hmm. because my brand is building. I've got some stuff coming up in the media, and I'm thinking, I know I'm not going to change, so mm-hmm. what's the answer here? Like, I'm always going to, and I know that it's getting,
but
more
what
binary.
What is the answer, Steve?
I came, so this is why you're here.
Yeah, I know. But it's like what the answer is, to be true to who you are.
Yeah, and just take the, and take
and,
the
and,
fire.
And it's like, it's, you know, that's the one thing I've always fall back on, is just knowing, you know, if you're an idiot, you know, if you're irritating people, you know, if you're not a good person, and then ultimately, you know, you're going to get what's coming to you and you probably deserve it. But I know that I'm a good person. I know my foundations. I'm polite. I'm respectful. You know, I don't go out to offend, ever go out to offend. I hate confrontation because of the way that I know that I can deal with confrontation. Mm-hmm. It frightens me to get into that situation because I know what I'm capable of. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I don't ever, I'm over polite. I'm mm-hmm. over respectful because I think people should be treated like that. Now, I like to be treated like that. I wasn't treated like that when I started off in my army career, and I know what it feels like, okay? And I never want anyone to experience that. So I'm over-polite and I'm over-respectful. And I've always fought back on that. I always look at myself in the mirror and I go, Ant, I know I'm a good person. And that are the foundations that I've built. That's my foundations. That's who I am, okay? So you can knock my bricks down. I will, but guess what? I will keep building and building and building. And you can knock it, but even if you knock them down to the foundations, I can fall back on being true to myself. And there's no more liberating, Steve, liberating feeling than that, of being true to who you are, going, do you know what? I'm not going to fit into that agenda. I'm not going to fit into that box. I'm not going to squeeze myself in there to make myself feel uncomfortable for your agenda, because that's not who I am.
Would you rather lose it all?
Yeah, 100%, because I've got my foundations. I've got my foundations. I will always build, Steve. Always build. And this part of the building is so high now that can you cancel me? Crack on. Because I guarantee you I just keep building this side, this side, this side, this side. Because the people that know me know who I am. And someone said this to me, with all the stuff that's been going on lately, you know, I've had some sponsors that have cancelled. I've had some TV programs that have cancelled. Crack on. But the people that are by my side, the sponsors and the channels and the production companies that are by my side that have worked for me, saying, Ant, we have the privilege of knowing you. And that rung a chord to me. Though I'm like, they have the privilege of knowing me. And I think to myself, wow, you've got the privilege of knowing me. I've got the privilege of knowing myself because I know who I am. And I'm glad I gave you that privilege. And it's not being big-headed. I'm glad I gave you that privilege of knowing me, because you know that this is just a storm of words. You know that this is just media hype. You know this is just fake news. You know this isn't real. You know, yeah, I've maybe got a little bit of a fiery side to me, but you know you're getting that with me. You know I'm rough around the edges. So yeah, and I'm happy to, you know, to cut a few of the edges, but those edges are still going to be there. Do you know what I mean? So when they said that to me, and it's something that will stick with me forever, and it's from a very, very good sponsor, you know, it's to do with my books. And I can just, and I remember sitting back and just taking that breath and going, keep doing what you're doing, Ant. You're doing the right thing. And then this last week, you know, so many doors have opened. Production companies calling me, channels calling me. You know, and you hear about it. You hear about, oh, you know, you get cancelled, then that's your career done. But then you've got your Piers Morgans, you've got your Jeremy Clarksons, and now you've got your Ant Middletons, okay? And it just goes to show that I'm doing the right thing. And that actually, yeah, I'm not going to fit. I'm not going to be comfortable with everyone. You know, I'm not going to be their cup of tea. Well, that's fine, because guess what? I don't want to work with you. If I get questioned one little bit about who I am, like I said before, if I get questioned one little bit about who I am by any brands, any sponsors, any channels, then I will not work with them. I will say, listen, thank you very much. It's obviously, you know, not the right match. You go on and do your thing and I'll go on and do my thing, because I will always go on and do my thing. And that building can completely drop to the foundations. But when you're honest with yourself and you know who you are, those foundations are solid. You will always have something to build from. But when you're not honest with yourself and everything comes crumbling down and you have no foundations to fall on, you're fucked. That's when you're in trouble. That's when you start to go, well, I won't say that. I won't act like this. I won't do this and I won't do that. And that's when you become someone else. That's when you become fake to who you are. And guess what? Desperate times then. You're like a wounded animal. And guess what? You're probably going to be right at the back of the pack for the rest of your life.
The psychological impact of living a life that isn't true to yourself. And I mean, this is why people have these like midlife crises when they've, even in like the professional world where they've, you know, their mum and dad have told them to go and be a banker or a lawyer. They don't want to be, they want to be a fucking dancer or whatever. Yeah. And then they get midlife crises. And you look at throughout psychology, I talk about this a little bit in my book. You know, if you look at certain communities like the LGBTQ community, their suicide rates are so high amongst those groups because a lot of them have been oppressed in a way where they can't live their true life. They can't be their identity. So they've had to live a lie that's live a fake life. And then you see suicide rates go up because that is a form of torture. Mm-hmm. And this is when I asked you the question about, you know, would you rather lose it all? Mm-hmm. One would actually, maybe even if I question myself, say, well, what are you losing?
Yeah.
If you're losing TV shows and you're losing things that aren't true to yourself, is it a loss?
No, it's not a loss, because you will always find something that fits you. Do you know what I mean? If you have the passion and the drive and the ambition and the positivity of knowing who you are, then ultimately the world is your oyster. It's like, you know, people have this impression of me that I'm this hard-faced drill sergeant, non-accepting person. I am the complete opposite. Go and be who the fuck you want to be. That's my message. Then don't let anyone force you into saying anything, doing anything, or being anyone else. Be yourself. But this is a side that people don't see of you. Now, and this is, but this is my personal side, Steve. People see what they want to see. The media will write what they want to write. They will make you out to be who they want you to be.
But you can't put all of that into a hashtag. You've got to characterize yourself in 10 letters.
Yeah,
and this
absolutely.
Is the problem with issues that are complex and nuanced, and there's different layers. And you, if it doesn't fit into a hashtag, then, and this is the football team analogy as well. Mm-hmm. Quick one. I had a few words to say about one of my sponsors on this podcast. Quick interjection before we get back to the podcast. Just want to say that, as you know, because I've talked about it a few times on this podcast, I'm probably one of the biggest users in the world of a website called Fiverr.com, Fiverr.com. I use it for everything, whether it's my podcast or whether it's my personal brand content, whether it's my business or other projects that I'm doing. And this week, I've used it again. I've used it to make a website called Katana, which is my investment company. People don't know this. My old company was called Social Chain, and Katana, or Katana, is the Italian word for chain. That's the inspiration. Keep that to yourself. But it's just another example of how you can use Fiverr to help you expand your capabilities as an entrepreneur, as a content creator. And I've managed to get a website up for my investment company, Katana, in the space of 2.5 days. And it cost me 400 quid. Typically, that would cost tens of thousands of pounds. And typically, it would take months. That's the power of Fiverr, allowing you to quickly and affordably extend the capabilities of your team, of your personal brand, and achieve things that you might not have been able to otherwise. I want to talk, though, going back to your, you know, when you started in the military, one thing I find really interesting is the guy that was running around drinking, boozing, getting in trouble, for him then to go into the military and pass with flying colors is like a massive contradiction in my mind. I'm like, one appears to be a guy that's kind of out of control, the other one, and seemingly lacking the appreciation of authority. And then the other guy is one that's able to do what he's told and follow orders And how did you achieve such height?
That's what they want. Yeah. That's what they need. They need the animal on the battlefield. They need the aggression. They need the violence. Because ultimately on the battlefield, you counter violence with extreme violence. No, there's zero tolerance to violence in Sibby Street. In society nowadays, you show any form of violence, you're going to end up behind bars. Been there. But in the military, you counter violence with extreme violence. You counter anger with extreme anger. And that's needed. I needed to be that person on the battlefield. I needed to cut myself off from any emotional sort of feelings, any emotional, you know, sort of discrepancies, because they were the missions that I went on. You know, I was hunting down Taliban commanders. You know, I was getting into fucking shitstorms, into firefights every week, every couple, you know, 2-3 times a week. I needed to call on those demons to come to the forefront of who I was to get the job done. And then switch it. You're expected to switch it, because one moment you're kicking a door down, you know, taking out enemy combatants. The next door you're kicking the door down, there's women and children in there. So you live on that side or you live on that side. And then when you get the two confused, you know, I might be an Afghanistan best man, put me on camp, you know, well, you can't be doing that. And well, what, who the fuck do you want? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? You can't be doing that. You can't be, you know, getting into fights downtown. You can't be, you know, getting, you know, I used to get into a hell of a lot of fights, you know, it's fucking hell, it ruined my military career. Because, you know, but then putting 3 tours of Afghanistan I've done, almost back to back. Perfect out there, Ant. He's put boom, 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 boom. So what animal do you want? You know, and it's okay to be able to flip from one to the other when you're here. But when you live on the complete opposite sides of the spectrum, you're going to get confused every now and then. You're going to be met with a situation in society where you're met with aggression, you're met with violence, and this demon takes over. You know, and what is a moment of madness. It's just it's confusion, confliction between the two, you know, and it's between the two people. And sometimes it just goes whack.
Yeah.
But before you know it, that crossover is too much.
They're both like trained to survive, but in different environments.
In completely different environments. And sometimes those environments, you know, you're forced to act and those environments get switched.
Yeah.
And it's literally like a flash in front of your eyes. It's like bang, bang. Shit. I used the wrong person there, or I used the wrong environment. It's and that's the world that I live in. That's the world that I lived in. That was my life. That was, you know, I used to come back from Afghanistan, and, you know, I've got four children at home, a fifth one from a previous relationship who's 19. But I used to come home, I remember coming back from Afghanistan, and my daughter was born. She's 13 now. My daughter was born 10 days before I left for a 6-month tour in Afghanistan. So she was born, so I didn't know her. And I came back 6 months later, and she was like nearly 7 months. And then I went straight on Special Forces selection. So for another 6 months. So I came back after like a year, really, of not really being at home to a 1-year-old daughter who barely recognized me. You know, she would push me away. She would, you know, and I'd interact, and I'd be playing dolls on the floor, Barbies. And my wife came in one day, and I was playing with these Barbies, and she thought I'd lost the plot. She's like, I'm, you know, got these Barbies together, trying to make her laugh, trying to make her smile. Because for the last year, she's just seen this pent up war machine, you know, and I've come back, and I'm not very easy to deal with, you know, during those transitions. You know, I need a bit of time.
What do you mean by that? You're not very easy to deal with in those transitions.
Well, you come back from, you can't just take a head, even though I can do it. I can take a head off, put a different head on. But that transition of kicking doors down to being back with a family, I need, even now when I come back off of filming, when I come back, I need, before we actually start getting on again, you know, before I start settling back into the family, it takes about 2 weeks. And again, me and my partner are the best, most compatible partners in the world. The teamwork that we have is absolutely amazing, you know, hence why I've been with her for 16 years, been married for 14. But it still takes that 2-week period of me breaking her routine, of me coming in, you know, taking over everything, you know, with the kids, taking the kids to school, ruining her life that she's built.
Sure.
I come in like a storm.
Yeah.
And it takes 2 weeks before that storm normally calms down, and we go, oh, right, you know. And again, not arguing to this, but, you know, just disagreements, just control issues. It's like two worlds colliding, right? And then after the 2 weeks, as everything settles, I'm away again. I might be on tour. I might be like, I'm in Australia for 2 months now. It's like, so it's that constant communication, or that constant, you know, crossing over of worlds that you need to really sort of mold together. And as my life is getting more and more, and I'm not in these high octane situations, I'm not in these life or death situations, it's becoming easier and easier.
You talk, you know, I had actually a military commando sat in the seat as well, who talked about his experiences. And when he came back from war, he was talking to me about the PTSD he suffered. And just being around the house and, you know, seeing the tin can stacked on the shelf at home and like, you know, barking at his wife because they weren't straight and things like that. And feeling that, you know, feeling some of the disciplines of war coming home with him. Mm. I've seen you talk on this topic. So I know that, you know, you've handled that in a different way. But what are some of the things that have come back with you from war that you don't like or that you think aren't helping you in your personal life?
They're two different worlds. You know, you deal with dark humor, dark banter to get you through certain situations. And that dark humor and dark banter and dark way of talking is the norm to you because you live and breathe that. And sometimes that comes out, you know, and only when I'm doing a military style show, you know, you come out and you might say something which is, for me, probably a throwaway comment or a bit of banter, and then you realize there's 100 odd crew members listening. And there's nothing, you know, it just might be, I might say something about someone, or it's never direct, you know, it's always an indirect conversation that we have. It's that military banter that I fucking hate. Sometimes I hear myself talking like a military man and I hate it. I might say military words, you know, hoofing, honking, waz, you know, there's loads of them out there. And I think to myself, why are you talking like that? But it just comes out because I might find myself in a high octane situation, in a stressful situation, in an aggressive situation, in a violent situation, which I revert back to what I know works, which is this, ultimately this military person. But then I think, fucking hell, I'm not in a military environment. I'm not I'm in society, you know, I've got, you know, and it's controlling that I find really difficult. But knowing, also acknowledging that it needs to be controlled. You know, I'm not in the military anymore. You know, and I always hate this, once a Marine, always a Marine. You know, you get people go, hey, once a Marine, always a Marine. I'm like, I was a Marine 12 years ago, 10 years ago. You know, now I'm a media TV presenter. I'm now an extinguished author. I'm now, you know, I like to say, like, you know, about mindset, my mindset guru. I go around and do my tours. You know, I'm in a completely different space, but I have to pull upon this young soldier every now and then in order to get the job done, because I know that works. You know, I know that if I do that, but I just need to fine tune it. I need to buffer it around the edges, which again is a work in progress. You know, I put my hands up when I go, fucking hell, do you know what I mean? I shouldn't have said that, I shouldn't have done that. You know, and I'm the first one to admit it. But people have to realize that, listen, it's a work in progress. It's not something that I can change overnight. You need to understand me. You need to understand who I am in order to acknowledge that, okay, well, fucking hell. Yeah, that was a bit uncomfortable to see. You know, some of the things that we do with the recruits, you know, they're like, fucking hell, man. Like, he's on his knees and you're literally, you know, saying to him that you stay there. You know, if you think you're not worthy, you know, if you're a piece of shit, blah, blah, blah. But it's hard for people to see that and to watch that. But ultimately, there's always a positive motivator behind that. So that's where people, I think, get confused, is like, negativity is a great fuel. It's a great source to use to get to where you need to be, but only if there's a positive motivator ahead of it. So you can't use negativity to get through a situation if there's not a positive motivator, because all you'll do is you'll veer off in the negative lane.
Yeah.
Because there's no positive motivators to aim towards. It's like a plow. Right? I say the plow is the positive motivator, and the fuel is the negativity, whether it's aggression, whether it's revenge, whether it's, you know, prove people wrong, whether it's, you know, these are all things that fuel you. But you be sure that there's always a positive motivator. So when I'm talking like that to the recruits, when I'm doing, it's, believe it or not, it's to get the best out of them, to make them realize what they're capable of, make them bring their attributes and personality to the forefront so they can identify who they are. And a lot of people, they bring that to the forefront, or I flip that mirror on them, and they look at themselves and they go, no, I don't like what I see. They VW, or they go, or they leave.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. It's also a filter.
It's a filter.
And that's what a selection process is.
And that's, but that's how I, it's not only what a selection process is, that's how I live my life, Steve. I'm so brutally honest with what I do and situations I find myself in, and the environment that I choose to be in is, and it's that brutal honesty, it's that brutal sort of truth that the motivator is always becoming a better version of who you are, of learning something, growing from it, and becoming a better version of who you were yesterday.
And how important is it to take personal responsibility for your outcomes in life? Because there's a growing culture of blame and, you know, victimhood. And I see this as well as someone that, you know, the best thing that probably happened to me is if I was successful and I had parents that were rich and I had loads of money and I got a degree and I got these great grades, people would immediately go, well, no, Steve can't tell us anything because he got it handed to him. Yeah. Fortunately, I was the opposite. I'm a black kid born in Africa, kicked out of school, dropped out of university after one lecture, got no degree, parents are bankrupt. So I can talk a little bit more about like personal responsibility without being discredited. And people say, oh, well, of course you fucking say that. And like, but I see this growing culture because I was a kid in Moss Side in Manchester, stealing pizzas to feed myself only, I don't know, 7-8 years ago. And I know that my mindset and the behavior that my mindset created is the reason I'm sat here now.
Yeah.
Like, of course there's luck, timing, I understand that, but my mindset increased my probability of being sat here now.
Yep.
So when I preach that to people, especially people that don't want to take personal responsibility, or like, you know, victimhood or blame keeps them nice and safe and comfortable, and it means they don't have to look in the mirror.
Yep.
They go, fuck you, guy.
Yeah.
But it's hard to attack me. It's hard to attack me because what are you going to say?
Yeah.
You know, what privilege I had, the privilege I had was moving to this country as a baby.
But that's a privilege of knowing who you are, Steve.
Yeah.
So you can take all that income.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they haven't got the privilege of knowing you.
Yeah.
Right? But you have the privilege of knowing yourself because guess what? You've been there. You've done it. You've got the t-shirt. You've been honest with yourself. You realize your mistakes. You realize your errors of your way. You learn from failure. You grow from it. You become a better version of who you are. So that's why I say that statement of we have the privilege of knowing you is so powerful, because ultimately that's what you fall back on all the time. That's why you can take that and you can it will bounce off you. It's just like, that's your negativity. It's not nothing to do with me. That's you. And it bounces off me like it bounces off you. But the moment you step into that victim mentality, that's when you feel that the world owes you everything. That's when you feel like that, you know, why is he where he is and I'm not there? Why has he got this and I haven't got this? I could quite happily go back and not be cancelled. Okay, so for example, if I went, oh, guys, yeah, really, really sorry about that, but I suffered from PTSD, you know, the death of my father, you know, it's like, fucking hell. It's like, one, I don't suffer from PTSD. How many times have I had that thrown at me, Steve, going, and if you say you suffer from PTSD, who can question that? Well, no one can question it. Actually, wait, there's one person that can question it. Me. Because I haven't got fucking PTSD. Well, no, you haven't. But if you say that, then, you know, the papers will do this. The courts will do this. People will start to go, oh, well, actually, you know, the stuff that he's been through and he's seen and he's done and he's witnessed. Yeah, of course, listen, throw him another bone. Give him another chance. You know, feel sorry for him. Fuck that. Do you know what I mean? It's like when I went to prison. I left the military, went to prison, got into a violent altercation. Yep, violence on violence. Of course, put my hand up 100%. I'll do my time. My lawyer said to me, "Ant, do you want to go to prison?" I was like, "Of course, I don't want to go to prison. Who wants to go to prison?" He said, "Well, listen, here's your out." He went, "Say you've got PTSD. If you say you've got PTSD," he said, "I guarantee you," that's what he said to me, "guarantee you, you will not go to prison. You'll get a suspended sentence. You'll have to go and do a couple of courses. And then you'll be at home with the family." Now, I had 4 kids and a wife. Actually, at the time, I had 2 children and a wife at home that relied on me. I couldn't lie to myself. I thought, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to lie to you. I thought to myself, do you know what? That sounds appealing, because who can tell me that I haven't got PTSD? But then the question always goes back to you, because only you hold the answer, Steve. Only you have that answer. Only I knew that answer. I could lie to myself, live a lie, and fuck knows where I'll be now, right? I might be a bloody PTSD counsellor. I might be, you know, but I would have gone down that road years, right? Say I've got 2 years suspended sentence. 2 years of going down a road that wasn't me. Mm. Going down that road of pure lies. Every step I took wouldn't be a true one. Mm. I always say to people will mould you and direct you in life. You know, that's what people are there for. Good people, anyway. They try and mould. But if that first footstep that you take is not a true one, I said, do not take it. And the only person that knows that is you. And I always, always, always go back to that. Do I feel comfortable taking this footstep? Yes, I do. The rest of the world doesn't. Well, guess what? I feel comfortable doing it. But yeah, but he's going to have something to say about it. She's going to have something to say about it. They're going to have something to say about it. I don't care. Is it true to me? Go back to who I am. Yeah. Boom. I take it. And I deal with whatever comes at me, because it can bounce off me, right? Because as we spoke about, it's like we know who we are. We know what we're about. We know we're good people. So I'm willing to take that. Bang, bang, bang. And it does, Steve, it does literally bounce off me. But also it when it does get into me, because the moment it starts, you know, when it gets over, it does get into you. Once I sit down and process it, it fuels me. I feel like Thanos. It's just like, because I'm being true to who I am, and all this negative, and I'm thinking, right, just boom. Because guess what? I preach positivity till it comes home. Everything I believe is down to a positive mindset and how you perceive the way that you think. And the way, you know, we have this default mindset, which is negative. You know, everything's like, what if this, what if that? I won't do that because of this. And mine's the opposite. Mine's like, right, the best outcome is this, this, this. If anything comes along, I deal with it. Mm. Okay. And it's that mindset that I always, always fall back on. And it's, and again, it's one of those that I just find so liberating that I can just think that way. But I put myself in the firing line. I put myself constantly in the firing line to constantly challenge myself, to constantly flip these negatives into positives. Without negativity, you wouldn't have positivity. It wouldn't exist. Yeah. It doesn't, you know, it's a polar opposite. So people say, but so I challenge negativity. I love negativity because I will challenge it and challenge it and challenge it. I love the work ethic and the psychological sort of resilience it takes to challenge negativity. Because a lot of people that got negativity comes and they ignore it or they bat it off.
They run away.
But the moment you dig into it and you dig into it and you dig and it takes time.
It's a test as well, isn't it?
It tests you, right? And you dig into it and all of a sudden you see a little light. You see a little glimp of positivity. And that's all you're looking for is that one little seed. You grab that, boom, bank that, and then you grow that seed until you find the next one. Mm. And there's nothing more rewarding in this world than flipping a negative into a positive. Because if you're willing, and again, if you're willing to work hard enough and you're willing to take the shit and the fucking, and the bullshit and everything that surrounds negativity, if you're willing to dive into the center of it and you're willing to work in order to flip it into a positive, then I guarantee you, you will find a positive in it. And I guarantee you that would be the most rewarding thing you ever do. Hmm. And it's like failure. It's exactly the same with failure. I look at failure and it's just, it's like a challenge to me. It's like, you can't do that. And you don't know nothing about that. You're going to fail at that. Well, listen, I'll tell you what, I probably will fail at it, but I'm not scared to commit because I know that the moment I commit to failure, I'll take two or three or four steps into failure and I might go, yeah, right, I haven't achieved that. But those three or four steps that I've taken, that's what I bank. Those moments in the moment, that's what I bank. A lot of people, they might take on failure and they might fail their objective. And they think, oh, I failed that, therefore I'm a failure. And they forget how far they've come. That just, it's completely automatically written off because they're going, oh, I failed that. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I won't go near that again.
That becomes part of your identity. I'm a failure.
I'm a failure.
Yeah.
So anytime failures, they think they're safety bubble. Yeah, safety bubble, victim bubble, whatever. They won't go anywhere near it. But I love it. When negativity comes along and failure comes along, you know, I'm so intrigued on what I'll get out of it. I'm so intrigued what I'll learn from it. Because when you learn, you grow. When you grow, you become a better version of who you are. It's that knock-on effect that it has. And failure is exactly that. Failure isn't going anywhere. I've failed up to now in my life. I'm going to fail to the day I die. So are you. So are you. So are you. Every single one of you in here is going to fail. Whether you like it or not, it is everyday part of life as much as it is breathing. Mm. It's surrounded by us. So why do we ignore it? If it's part of who we are and part of what makes the world tick, then why don't we use it to our advantage?
Because the perceived cost of failure, whatever that might be, you know, Jenny at work is going to think I'm not so whatever, and this person's going to write this about me. The perceived cost, especially in the short term, feels greater. It feels, and that's the same force of like the PC brigade or that, you know, it's like, it's better just to stay in your lane today and to just like put your head down, be quiet, because people think, and this is where it's wrong. People think that's the safest place to be. Yeah. Reflecting on my own journey, when I went to university and I knew that this was a piece of shit and that I needed to quit if I was actually going to become an entrepreneur, like it's calling my mum and then telling her I'm dropping out and her telling me never to speak to her again, right? That was the resistance. That was the moment where life goes, stay in your fucking lane, right?
Yeah.
But and people go, you were so brave.
And then you're like that, you're grabbing hold of the wheel. Yeah. Like,
but my brain was so clear. The biggest risk, the biggest failure would have been staying in university and living a life not true to myself. So people say, oh, you're so much courage. Okay, courage would have been staying.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's the thing. Of course, my mum says, oh, never speak to me again and I don't speak to her for 2 years. But look at the upside of living of my, you know, even if I'd failed, like look at the upside of being myself. And I think that's pretty much what I'm hearing from what you're saying is like, there's this, you know, the short-term resistance where it's like, oh my God, if you fail, you're going to lose it all. It's like, no, you'll lose it all if you don't try.
It's exactly how, the thing about it is the way that your mindset thinks then, it's not a complicated way of thinking, Steve.
It's not.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, it's so simple, really. So simple, stupid. that it's almost incomprehensible. And everything that I do, and you just said it then, and make what you just said there makes complete sense to me. It's every single word you just said about that story, I'm like, that, yes, it's like, it's obvious. Yeah. Like, why wouldn't you do that? Right. But sometimes the most obvious things that are the hardest to process, the hardest to achieve. And with my books and my tours, you know, I don't get people coming off my tours going, and, you know, I've tapped into this part of my brain now. Thank you for this. It's like, they come off my tours or read my books and go, Ant, it was always in there.
Yes.
You just gave me this kick yourself moment where I'm just like, how did I not see that? How did I not, you put it in such layman terms, because I'm a simple man. Do you know what I mean? I'm not an intellect. I'm not a bookworm. I'm a simpleton. I'm a simple man. I keep things, the way that I get to my answers is good, bad, right, wrong, positive, negative, yes, no. Do you know what I mean? I keep it.
And it's listening.
But it's listening to who I am. And it's the most simplest way of getting to where you need to be. But we let the constraints and the bullshit and the complications of society and what other people think cloud all of that.
I almost see it like two dials, right? One of them is this voice inside, which everyone has in them. They're saying, go and dance in the hills of Costa Rica. And then there's this other really loud dial, right? The sound dial. And it's society and your mum and your whatever. And that one's saying, go be a fucking lawyer and shut up, right?
Yeah.
And in all of our lives, I think one dial is a little bit higher than the other.
Of course it is.
And the challenging thing, but the most important thing you can do if you want to reach your potential, be happy, avoid mental health issues, avoid midlife crises, is to like turn up the internal dial and just try and get that other dial, which is society's voice, right? Down to fucking zero, right? Yeah. And I just do you know? And I just feel if everyone could just do that in their own lives, which is not easy to do, because listening to this internal voice is going to come with real resistance.
Yeah.
People are going to cancel you. Yeah. My mum's going to not speak to me for years, right? But that's the short term cost for a long term gain. And as is the way with comfort, I see like comfort and like avoiding that resistance is it looks like a friend. It's a short term friend, but a long term enemy. Mm-hmm. And if you'd in the moments where you've said you've been like cancelled, quote unquote, had you caved, short term friend probably would still have a show or two.
Yeah, of course.
Long term,
but long term. And I say to people, what you've got to realise is that you are with yourself 24 hours a day for the rest of your life.
Mm.
No one else can even come close to that. No one else will even come close to that. So you are with yourself your whole life. People, they come and go. Situations, they come and go. So ultimately, you've got to live with yourself first before you try and live with anyone else, before you try and live with any situation, before you try and put yourself into any environment. That's what I say to people. And they go, well, I'm like, you're with yourself 24 hours a day to the day you die. Mm. Nothing comes close to that. No one comes close to being anywhere near that.
That's the person you've got to honour.
That's who you are.
Yeah.
So that's the person who you've got to honour. That's the person that you've got to make happy.
That's the boss.
That's the boss. Right. That's the person.
And it's impossible to please that voice and that voice, right? So like,
but please yourself, and ultimately, you know what comes out, it will, you know, should be raw, should be authentic, should be true. So, and then you'll find your belonging. You'll find your circle. You'll find your like-minded people. You'll find you'll find your belonging. It's like, you know, you must know, as you get more successful, as you know, you start thinking, you start changing, you start evolving your mindset more and more and more and more, your circle gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. I'm happy with that. You know, I'm happy with that, because not that I'm above anyone or below anyone, you know, we're just on different ends of the spectrum. Okay, because guess what? I'm going to keep evolving. My mindset's going to keep changing. I'm going to keep getting wise. I'm going to keep getting more knowledgeable. I'm going to keep being honest with myself. You know, and for me, that's my purpose in life. Nothing out there. You know, it's nice to have the nice cars, the nice houses. Don't get me wrong. It's nice to have money. I've had no money and now I've got money. I know which side I'd rather be on. Okay. That's all that comes part and parcel with being true to who you are. And my purpose in life, which is I will never achieve, but which is I find fascinating, is trying to get the best possible version of Ant Middleton. Trying to get to that, okay? But knowing that I never get to that answer, because I'll be on this constant progression of becoming a better version of who I am. But I never become the best version of who I am, because that's when you're perfect. That's when you're at 100% you, and that's not real. Yeah. It doesn't exist. But the purpose of getting closer and closer and closer and closer to that answer is such a fascinating journey for me that there's nothing that comes close to it. Mm. There's nothing that comes close to it. And whether I have the counseling or the shows that keep coming or the TV production companies that call me now and the channels that call, whether I have failures or whatever it may be, all of these, everything that bounces in towards me is something to learn from. And it's a lesson. And I'm going to learn from it and I'm going to grow from it and I'm going to get closer and closer to the answer, closer and closer to my objective, closer and closer to my purpose. And that is to try and get as close as I can to being the best version of myself. And I'm fascinated with that. I'm addicted by it. I'm addicted to it. I'm obsessed with it. So like I said, when I get that Thanos moment, I'm like, bring all this negativity at me, bring it, because I'm just churning away at it. Doesn't mean I'm always happy. Sure. I'm not always happy, you know. I don't go around sprinkling positive fairy dust. I'm not that type of preacher, right? But I preach, you know, working on your mind to make it positive. You know, challenging negative situation, thinking, what is a negative situation? I've got to tackle it with a positive mindset. Make a concerted effort to train your mindset to think positively, to flip the script from this default mindset where everyone, you know, thinks negatively. And I love working at that. I love working at that. So all of this stuff that you give me, it does. Once I go, because I go quiet, like this last week has been a media storm, and I'll go quiet and I'll be with my family. I'll be with my management. They're like, "Ant, you're quiet." And I'm like, "I'm quiet because I'm churning away at negativity. I'm not unhappy. Don't get me wrong. Listen, but I need to be left alone for 2-3 days, maybe a week. There's so much negativity coming in and I'm chipping away at trying to find the light. No, nothing there. Trying to find the light, trying to find, boom, bang. And then I bank this positivity. And then the next week I'll be, boom, back to Ant. Do you know what I mean? Back to this positive, naturally positive person because I've trained my mind to think like that. I'm always in a positive headspace. But sometimes I go quiet, doesn't mean I'm always happy. So don't get positivity mixed up with happiness.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're two completely different things. And happiness comes from
in
knowing who you are. You know, it comes from being true to who you are, knowing who you are. And you could be the poorest man in the world and you could be the, you know, you could have no one or nothing, but you could still be happy. You know, or you could be the richest man in the world and you know the script.
One of them's like a general sense of optimism that I'm positive about the future. And the other one's just like internal contentment. But our moods change.
Yeah, like, of course.
You know, we have shit days, bad days, whatever. But 100%. In turn, we're optimistic and tight, right?
Yeah.
One of the questions that I really wanted to ask you, because of what's going on in the world with this whole pandemic and COVID, is I was thinking as I was like brushing my teeth or whatever this morning, I was thinking there's a ton. If my audience could ask you one thing, probably would be around the fact that the world changed this year. A lot of people's lives were uprooted. They lost their businesses, their jobs, whatever. And then I thought, you know, Ant's probably, well, I for sure have been in situations where you felt like, whether it's on the battlefield or whatever, that this was a fight that where the odds were against you.
Yeah.
And in those moments, there's winners and losers. And, you always talk about mindset. What is the mindset that people need in these moments where the odds don't look like they're very much in their favor? Mm. That you've seen from the battlefield where you've emerged victorious because, you know, you didn't indulge in victimhood or whatever. And does that make sense?
Yeah, it 100% makes sense. For me, it hasn't. It's about embracing change. You know, majority of people, they live their life on autopilot or they live in the void, I call it, where everything around them is changing. You know, the world is constantly changing. Everything around us is constantly changing, whether it's, you know, climate control, whether it's, you know, in the way that we think, the way that we're evolving, the way that the world is going, the way that animals are evolving, the way that the sea is encroaching or, you know, decreasing, whatever it may be. Everything is changing around us and we are designed to change with it. So what we're actually doing is we're actually going against the grain when we become complacent, when we get comfortable, when we get into one sort of situation and we stay in that situation. We're working in the opposite way that the world should be evolving. We should be constantly changing. We should be constantly evolving. We should be constantly moving forward. You know, look at my career. I've gone from the army to the Marines, to the special forces, to the media, to books, to authors, to literacy, to business. It's like, I love change. I love being put in a situation where I'm literally chucked in the deep end with dive boots on and I have to tread water. I love that because it's so challenging and it's so, so stimulating that you're forced to change. You're forced to think of something different. You're forced to do something differently. You're forced to change the way that you approach something because you've been put in a situation where it's been forced upon you. But when it's not forced upon you, which the world does, it forces it upon us. But when it's not forced upon you, when you get comfortable, then you fall into this void. You fall into this complacency. You fall into not moving along with the world.
But are those your demons again? Because I'm thinking the reason why Ant loves to be chucked into the water with his dive boots on is because you relish challenge. And this comes maybe links to the victimhood point and a general problem in culture and society where people like comfort. Cotton wool.
Yeah.
A lot of people are being brought up now with cotton wool.
We're not designed to be comfortable. We're not designed to have cotton wool strapped around us. It's society. It's the restraints and the shackles of society that is forcing us to be like this. It's not who we are. Look how far we've come. You know, look at just through history, how far we've come. And I feel like that we're actually devolving now. I actually feel that we've got to a point where we're going backwards, where, you know.
Used to be survival of the fittest.
Yeah,
now
and like, you could push a rock in front of your cave, you know what I mean, to survive, you know. Used to be at the top of the food chain. We're not designed to be comfortable. We're not designed to be wrapped up in cotton wool. We're not designed to be shackled down. And that's why there's so many problems in the world right now, is because of these shackles, is because of these chains, is because of the restraints that society is putting on us. It's forcing us into mental illness. It's forcing us to act in ways that we're not designed to act in. It's forcing us to switch off to the most powerful tool that's in the universe, your minds. We're forced to just put it on fucking dormant. You know, that be a, it's we're going against the grain of what we're supposed to do, of who we're supposed to be, on how we're supposed to act and how we're supposed to evolve. So when you've got this going round like this, and then this stops. There's this synchronicity that's not working in partnership with each other. You know, without us on this planet wouldn't be as evolved as it was. Without the planet, then we wouldn't be evolved as it was. You know, and what's actually happening is you've got these two forces that are grinding against each other rather than working together with each other in synchronicity.
I was reading this crazy thing the other day, and I think I've talked about this maybe once before, but it shows that the life expectancy in the UK and the US fell for 2 years in a row. I think it was last year or the year before, for the first time ever. And they look at the numbers as to why the life expectancy has fallen for the first time ever. And it's because of like the opioid crisis, people who are getting addicted to drugs. And then they say, so why are people getting more and more addicted to drugs? And they say, well, because they're lacking meaning in their life. And when people lack meaning, the science has shown, whether you do it to animals, you take away their meaning. I talked, I think, in the last podcast, and I'd hate to repeat myself, but I also don't care about these rats. And I fucking, because the right about my book, I'm so fascinated by it. They put a rat in a cage and take away everything from it, and they give it the option of drinking heroin water or normal water. It becomes a drug addict. They then introduce a partner, some stimulation, some running wheel, some other things, and they give it heroin water or normal water, and it doesn't choose the heroin water. It doesn't become a drug addict. Just by inserting meaning into its life, it avoids the heroin. And then you think, okay, so what's going on in society? You think, well, people are lacking challenge and meaning because we're trying to create a culture maybe where challenge and meaning are a bad thing. And that's actually having an adverse effect, because as you say very eloquently, like, that's not who we are.
Do you know what? I love how you just put that, Steve, because you've just put my thoughts into a scientific form. Because again, I'm not an intellect, I'm not a bookworm. You know, it's like I have psychiatrists come up to me and go, where did you study, Ant? I'm like, no, this is all every single little ounce of me is through life experience. I come from the University of Life. You know, and what I've just said there, it's strange that, and that's why I love talking to people like yourself, because I've put that as in how I'm thinking. I haven't read anything from a book, and you've just put it into a whole sort of scientific, and it's like, that's exactly that. It's exactly what I've just said, and you've just put it into something that's been proven. And that's the way that I think. That's the way that I perceive life.
And it's funny because, as you say, I'm not an intellectual, but I've sat here with intellectuals and they've said the exact same thing. Like Yohan Hari, he wrote a book on this, 9 Reasons Why People Are Getting Depressed and Anxious, best-selling book. He sat here and he said the exact same thing. So when I hear it twice or three times and then I read it in another book, I think these are just fundamental truths.
Yeah.
And when I get to that point where you've walked a different walk of life to that intellect who's wrote a book on it, but you've both arrived at the same place.
But they come at the same place.
That's going in my fucking in my diary forever, you know.
But that's super interesting as well. It's like, you know, but you can't take away that, you know, you can't unwrite that because it's written within evolution. It's written within the way the world has evolved. It's written in the way that we think. It's written in the organs, the muscles, and the body that we have. Mm. It's all here. It's all fucking present right now.
Yeah.
It's not in a book that we're going to read. It's fucking happening right now. It's here. It's real. This energy source that you are, you're a fucking energy source. We're energy sources. Is synchronized with the planet, which is one big energy source. It's one big ball. And I had a moment of clarity on when I was filming. I've always felt a connection with the earth. You know, I talk about, you know, we can climb to the highest peak of the apex of the world, Mount Everest. We can climb to that because people said, yeah, but we've had to do this in order to get there. You know, working against the mountain. I'm like, no, the way that mountain is formed, that's a foothold for you. That's an arm reach for you. That's, you know, it's designed to work with you. So don't look at a mountain and go, oh, fucking, I've got to get up there. It's working against me. No, it's that little stone there that you put your foot on. That's helping you up to stand on its apex. It's helping you up to stand on its summit. And I've always felt a connection with the earth. Always, always, always. You know, when I put my feet in it, when I put my hands in it, you know, I belong here. You know, and I have this theory that people think that, you know, that if you put the planet as a tree, where they think we're just birds that come and sit on the tree and they think we're just visitors and then we go. We're not. We're the leaves.
The tree, yeah.
Yeah, we're the leaves of the tree. Do you know what I mean? And then, you know, we grow in it. We're part of, you know, this evolution.
Very spiritual.
But yeah. But I'm not a spiritual person, but...
Maybe you are, but maybe your definition's wrong. Because I posted on my Instagram last week.
Yeah, I said that
we've just had... It's funny. My Instagram post literally says, I've never thought of myself as a spiritual person because I don't resonate with like the hippie stigma of it.
No, yeah, yeah.
Like I'm not that guy. Yeah. However, the end... It's one story.
Yeah. Right?
The end of it was like, if you define spirituality as feeling somewhat connected to the world, which I now do, then I now consider myself to be spiritual. This was just one story. And this was like 3 days ago.
Because a lot of people do ask if I'm spiritual. Yeah. And I always say no. But yeah, maybe I am. But it's that theory of being, there's a connection. One can't live without the other. And when we're the leaves. And we're going to fall off and there's going to be new leaves, you know. But everything recycles back into itself. Do you know what I mean? We don't just all of a sudden go up into, you know, everything goes back into the earth. Everything
You're
regenerates.
Definitely spiritual. I went and Googled it, definition of spirituality. Yeah. And the definition I read was like the feeling or belief that we are interconnected with the world.
Yeah.
The stigma is the issue. That's what alienates both of us from saying I'm a spiritual person because we're not like hippies. We're not like, you know, but we are. We like,
I love that.
You know what I mean? So.
And I go back, going back to this moment where it just resonates, you know. And the reason why I do all these things is I just want to reconfirm that my way of thinking is true to me, is why I do this, you know. And that's why I put myself in these awkward situations because it gives a light bulb moment where I go, do you know what, bloody hell, you know, I'm on the right path, I'm getting this right. And I was away filming. And I felt this, you know, I was out in the mountains in Chile, in the Andes, and I could just feel a real connection, you know, like a real presence, you know, and it's a lovely, lovely feeling. And I can just remember just an energy connection. It's really strange that it happened, an energy connection. And as I was walking by, I was walking alongside of this mountain, and as I was walking alongside, I heard a big boom, massive bang, and I turned towards the mountain, and I'm not joking, it was probably about 300 meters away. So it's like, you know, and this bit of rock went, must have passed, no word of a lie, within 2 meters of me. you know, and a big, because the mountains, it's an energy source. They're fucking bursting. They're literally like that. And the mountain, every now and then, and it's the first time I experienced it. I heard about it, but I'd never experienced it. And it went bang. And it nearly took my head off to the point where I was like, fucking hell, I thought it was the incoming, you know, I was like, out of there. And then I realized, I was like, well, just, and you see a little bit of mountain fall off, boom, boom, boom. And it's where the energy of that mountain, and, you know, unless you get out and about and you see it, it's like, poof. And I thought to myself, wow. I remember stopping and thinking, I felt that before that even, not that specific moment, but I felt the energy. So I felt the connection there. And then that was, it's almost as if the mountain was talking to me, going, what you feeling is right. Listen, we are powerful. We have a connection. Without you, there wouldn't be me. Without me, there wouldn't be you. And just that confirmation just makes me realize, wow, you know, this is powerful stuff. This is, you know, this is how you should be feeling. Once you're in tune with yourself and connected to this planet, then there's not much that you feel that you can't do. There's not much that phases you in life. There's not much that you won't try and achieve. There's not much that you won't achieve. And I feel sorry, or because I can talk about being in tune with the planet and being, you know, being connected to Mother Earth, but unless you are in tune with that, then you just think I'm talking bollocks. You just think, what the hell is he on about? He's some spiritual idiot, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, this is the personal life that I really keep to myself. You know, I've spoken a lot about it today, which I've never spoken about before. But this is who I am. Do you know what I mean? So there's so much more behind what the media put out and what the papers put out and what the media agenda is and what they want you to be seen as. And there's this whole life behind me that's the real me. That's who I am. So when any of this other stuff that's made up by other people that comes in from not within, it is so easy for me just to bat off. So easy for me just to go bang, bang, bang. But don't get me wrong, sometimes I work harder at it to bat it off. Sometimes it does stick and you have to go, but it's such a liberating feeling. And I'll always say to people, and this is my, you know, find out who you are. Go on that journey, not for self-discovery, because that sounds spiritual, right? Go on that journey of finding your purpose, of becoming the best version of who you are. Because once you start that journey, you will get addicted to it. It is fascinating, and it will only serve you well. It will only serve you well, because it's a life. I want to live till I'm 150. Because say I live till I'm 100. 100 years isn't long enough. I still want more. I want to know more. I want to be on this journey for as long as I can be on this journey. This is what gives me longevity. This is what gives me purpose. I want to be on this journey for as long as I can be. And when I think, the only setback is when I think, you know, I've got another, you know, 50, 60 years of it, it sort of saddens me. So I'm hoping that by that stage we can live to be a bit more immortal, a bit more immortal. But it's
Well, listen, Ant, I think that's a really powerful place to end, and I think that's something that I'll continue to ponder. I wanted to say thank you though, because there are a few people that have the courage in this day and age to be themselves and to speak their mind, and unfortunately it feels like a bit of a dying breed, but you're one of those people. And having spent time with you before we started filming and during this conversation, I had the privilege of getting to know who you are a little bit, as you say, and that's a person that I do respect, one that inspires me and reminds me of the importance of following my truer self. So I just wanted to say thank you for having this conversation today, and thank you for being yourself.
Steve, you're a gentleman. Thank you.
Thank you.